This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, guys? I'm Candace Dillard-Bassett, and you may know me from my time on The Real Housewives of Potomac or as a part of the latest cast of The Traitors.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus.
On our podcast, Undomesticated, we don't just say the quiet parts out loud. We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you into the chaos.
If you're ready for bold takes, real talk, and a little fun, come join us.
Listen to and follow Undomesticated, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Nicola Temple. Hi, Nicola.
Hi, Sue.
It's great to have you on the show. I wrote a little song for you. Are you ready? I just wrote it.
Oh, I'm excited. Let's hear it.
All right. We met her in a bar down in Old Bristol where we ate fresh food and even granola. Nick, 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 Nicola. Do you like that?
Fabulous. I love it. I can't wait to hear further verses.
Oh, well, this is all you get for now because it was a rush job. But thanks for joining our show today to talk about best before the evolution and future of processed food. Because we know, Nicola, that from the dawn of time, right, people have been processing food. So lest we forget, people who live where we live still do some canning and so on and so forth. So we don't want to think this is new, but it certainly has evolved, right?
That is absolutely correct. So the oldest estimate is perhaps 2 million years when the first humans started to pound roots and slice meat and potentially even start cooking it. And that, you know, shaped what we look like as humans, in fact, this ability to process food. And it has most certainly evolved so that it's, you know, the technologies that exist today sort of start to blur what our understanding of food is, how long food can last. You know, a freshly cut loaf of bread, for example, probably shouldn't last a week on your countertop. We know that if you've ever baked bread yourself, it starts to go stale in a matter of days. So, the technologies have certainly advanced.
Most just certainly. And even when I'm at my house and I have oranges and things, I just marvel that they're in my kitchen. So I guess a lot has to be done in the background for things to get to where they are going in a cost efficient and I guess long lasting way. So what would surprise us about maybe some of the processing that is done for certain foods to give them some sort of a shelf life?
So all of the bagged salads, for example, you know, when you cut a head of lettuce, you've made one single cut to the base of that lettuce. But when we love the variety of the leaves that come in a bag of lettuce, and each one of those stems is cut, and so this sort of creates this rapid decay for each of those leaves at every cut. And so the bags that they're contained in have been it's called modified atmospheric packaging, and they've changed the ratio of gases, for example, to try and slow down that decay process. But, you know, things as simple as an apple, for example, you know, it can be photographed as much as 100 times just to look at the ratio of green to red, because some supermarkets would prefer a different ratio than others. And, you know, that's an example of really just sort of sorting, but we don't really think of an apple as being processed at all. But even something as simple as that has been has been processed.
Well, but we think, Nicola, maybe we don't know, but we think that bag salads are, they're kind of the new norm because lettuce is such a volatile commodity. I mean, we've just seen this E. coli outbreak with the romaine. So, you know, when we see that, we actually feel a degree of safety, even though I can tell when you're in the restaurant that isn't most of it from a bag at this point?
Yeah, bagged lettuces have taken off exponentially. I mean, it would be any food manufacturer's dream to have sort of the exponential rise in popularity that bagged lettuce has had. But, you know, it even two or three decades, well, no, so prior to the 1980s, say, the technology wouldn't have existed in order to keep those little leaves all as fresh as we would like to see them. But it is because we love the variety that comes with a bagged lettuce. And there's, of course, it's been washed. It's been, as I said, it's an atmospheric change. The atmosphere within the packaging has changed to try and slow that decay down. And all of these technologies exist to also try and produce a safer food for everyone as well.
Someone,
as the E. coli.
Yeah, I know. You're always taking a chance. But someone wants to know if it's possible for someone to develop an allergy because of food processing.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly been one of the questions around the gluten intolerance, for example. You see a lot more gluten intolerance in North America than you do here in Europe, as an example. And one of the reasons for that has been proposed that because the bread making process has changed, so it's not fermented for as long, it's sort of all been sped up using enzymes and other methods, then it's possible that people are starting to develop an intolerance to gluten that doesn't exist. For example, they might tolerate sourdough, a proper sourdough that's been fermented for, you know, a few days, essentially. So it's possible, but it's also possible. It's also some food processing has helped us eliminate some allergies. So it was our ability to process milk into cheese that started us the trend of becoming lactose tolerant. So we're very rare among the mammals in that we can drink milk into adulthood. So about 35% of the population can drink milk into adulthood. And it was because we were processing milk into cheese that enabled that mutation to happen in our genetics.
How much of a development has been done so things that are in the market look attractive to consumers? Because you know how it is. You go to the store and maybe you look over the fruit and whatnot. And if it has a blemish, you might not pick it. Or you go over to the, you select meat based upon the way that it looks. So what's been done in that regard to make things sort of aesthetically pleasing to the consumer?
There's been, quite a few things. So, for example, chicken breasts can be plumped up with added water to make them look a bit fuller. There's been some discussion about meats having dyes added to them in order to make them look fresher. So there are definitely cases of the food industry using processing methods to be a bit deceiving. You know, there's coatings and dips that you can use to make a cut apple look like it was just cut freshly for up to 27 days. And for me personally, that's where it crosses the line, because I think that's very deceiving. If you know, you sort of have an expectation of how food should behave, and when it doesn't behave that way, it just alters our perception.
What do you think what will happen in the future? Well, let's talk about this first. In our culture in the United States, Nicole, there is a lot of waste in the food stream for now. Do you think in the future there will be less? What kind of things will be done maybe to improve that with consumers and try to get them to understand how severe it is?
I think there is a strong movement already happening, and there's lots of countries around the world, lots of supermarkets have been running, for example, you know, ugly fruit and vegetable campaigns to try and get people to choose the less aesthetically pleasing veggies and whatnot. But there is still a tremendous amount of waste, and I think that that's one of my great fears, is that processed food has a bit of a bad rap, and some of that is definitely justified. But if we sort of ignore, if we don't say, have a rational conversation about processed food, then there won't be the money to drive innovation to reducing things like food waste. Instead, all of the research and development will be carried out by manufacturers that are more motivated by profit rather than resolving, you know, huge societal problems just like reducing food waste. So that is definitely something I would like to see happen as a result of this book.
Let's talk about the movement toward organic food, which has its own place in our supermarkets and seems to tout the fact that it is much better for you, although it does come at a price. Will the day come, would you think, when that will be more accepted, even at the price, because people want products that are more natural?
Yeah, I think there will always have to be a range of price options, and while I think that, in fact, anything that isn't grown organically should be the thing that's labeled rather than the organic food, I think that we have to be realistic. I mean, sliced ham, for example, there in any supermarket, you'll see a range of products from, you know, organically grown, grass-reared, happy little pigs to, you know, the really cheap value ham that's available. And the manufacturers are adding more and more water to that product so that they can offer a product that's within a price range that people want. So I don't think that there's ever going to be, you know, organic food will be ubiquitous. There will always be a need for cheaper options. And that's why it's important to have this rational conversation about processed food and its role in our society.
Okay, what about GMOs, which there is some backlash against, and that might go with, you know, how they're labeled and how they're made. When in your research, is there anything particularly troubling that you find about GMOs? And I know that's a very large question, but what do you think?
That is a very large question. Yeah. I sort of stayed clear of GMOs, to be honest, and instead introduced the concept of nanotechnology, because I think it runs the risk of going the same direction as GMOs. I think GMOs had some horrible communications around them, and so while not the whole concept of GMOs as a whole is not all concerning, there are areas where we need to be precautious, but that doesn't mean we should throw the whole idea out. And I think that's the same with nanotechnology as well. And I think that that's something that we're going to see more and more with relation to our food. You know, looking as an example, we're looking for ways to reduce our sugar consumption throughout all of our food chains. And so if we can manufacture sugar that's super small, which is what nanotechnology is, then, you know, we increase the amount of sweetness that we get from far less sugar. So is that going to happen into the future? And just like GMOs, we need to be cautious about our use of some nanotechnologies and embrace others.
Yeah, the pervasive use of sugar and some even things that you think are good for you, if you read the content of sugar, they are not. Why do manufacturers do this? And do you think the palate of individuals can be changed in the future so that they don't crave it and maybe they can scale back on it?
Yeah. If you've ever, I don't know whether you've ever cut, sort of tried to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, but if you do that for any period of time, you know, you go back and you have a grape or a strawberry and it just tastes intensely sweet. So there's no denying that your palate can change, and you are absolutely right. You know, sugar is ubiquitous, and it's because we've become so efficient at processing and refining sugar. It's become an ingredient rather than just a sweetener or an occasional treat. So it's used as a tool by the food industry. It's a preservative. It enhances flavors. It can counter acidity and some of the other food additives that might have a tartness about them. So, you know, citric acid, for example, is used as a preservative, and then, you know, they add more sugar in to try and counter that tartness. So, and the risk of that is, of course, you know, if one manufacturer adds a little bit more sugar into their tomato sauce, for example, then consumers are inherently going to prefer that tomato sauce. And so then the other manufacturers will probably up their sugar content in response to that. And suddenly, everything becomes a bit sweeter. And I certainly notice that. I'm Canadian, and I go back and forth between Canada and Britain. And I notice, you know, there's huge differences. So curries are much sweeter here than they are in Canada, for example. But, you know, Strongbow cider is way sweeter in Canada than it is here.
That's an interesting thing to bring up. I never thought of it that way, that palates based on country may be a bit different. And finally, before we let you go, the future of food may be a little bit on the wild side. Some of the things that are out there that you write about are kind of mind-blowing to me. So you want to tell the audience about some of the laboratory creations and 3D technology that will come into play?
Yeah, so 3D printing, that was you know, something that came out of looking at ways to provide astronauts with fresher food, if you will, looking at 3D printing. And then some restaurants now are incorporating 3D printing, so printing chocolate garnish, for example. You know, you're just putting out a whole bunch of the same thing, and that works really well. But there was a group of MIT students who were really ingenious, and they printed pasta out. We love different shaped pastas, but of course, when they're all different shaped, they take up a lot of packaging. And so they printed out the pasta flat, and then they put another layer, so it became 4D printed, of just cellulose, you know, just plant material, in a different pattern on the pasta. And then as soon as you boiled that pasta, they changed their shape as a result of the way it had been printed. And so it meant they could all be packed flat and use a far less packaging than a pre-shaped pasta. And so I think we're going to see some interest. I mean, that sort of sounds way out there and a bit just something out of the pages of a sci-fi novel, but who knows? I mean, there's been all sorts of innovations that have happened throughout human history that I'm sure sounded a bit off the wall to begin with.
For certain. Nicola, thank you for being with us today and tolerating our questions and talking about a really interesting subject. Best before the evolution and future of processed food. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, guys? I'm Candace Dillard-Bassett, and you may know me from my time on The Real Housewives of Potomac or as a part of the latest cast of The Traitors.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus.
On our podcast, Undomesticated, we don't just say the quiet parts out loud. We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you into the chaos.
If you're ready for bold takes, real talk, and a little fun, come join us.
Listen to and follow Undomesticated, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.